Well, hello everyone, and welcome to our final coaching call here on March 24th, our second call here in March, and it's great to be here. We're going to just basically dive right into Q&A, and just wanted to remind you how you can ask questions. So if you're listening in through the webcast, so basically through your computer speakers, you know what you do, right? Just type in your question, hit submit. I will see it here and read it out loud and answer it. If you're on the phone or Skype, just dial *2 on your telephone keypad. That will raise your hand, and I will get you unmuted. So I don't see any pre-submitted questions, so we'll go ahead and get started with whoever wants to go first and go from there. All right, let's see. Kino. Hey, Kino, how are you?
Pretty good, Ed.
Excellent.
I just had a, one question for you. Let's see. You had a sent me a post on or reply on Facebook when you took a look at my site.
Mm-hmm.
And you were suggesting that I put the content or that I put the homepage content actually on the title page, and I guess that's I'm using Squarespace, and I guess the cover page that they use is not the same as the home page.
It's okay.
One of the pages you can select. I'm just wondering.
Yeah. So what I would ask them is, how can I make the home page basically my cover page, or how can I move that over?
Okay.
You just let them know, look, when people go to my domain, right, when they type in my domain name in their address bar, how can I have that content appear on the first page they see?
Okay. Okay.
And they should be able to do that. And it might require them to just to do an automatic redirect or move it, but there should be an easy way to make that happen.
Okay. I don't know. You know, normally the way you do it is you put a text box on the page and you just type in your text.
Okay.
I don't know if you can do that on the cover page, but I can ask them.
You know what? I would check with them first before you do too much, just in case there's an easier way.
Sure. Because I do like the cover page kind of the way it is display wise. It's definitely different from the other pages. The other pages are just plain pages.
Yeah.
And the cover page has I like the template they use. It's got this nice ultra modern design, buildings and so forth, making it look futuristic, which is pretty much the look I like to use. I just hadn't considered the possibility of putting content text on that page.
Yeah, and I'm with you. It's really beautiful. My concern is that somebody's going to get there and go, okay, well, I guess this website's not live yet or something.
Okay.
Right, they're not going to see content. There's got to be something in there. Even pages that kind of follow that approach, they have something there.
Okay. I might just put something catchy introduction there to encourage them to go further, but I'll play with it, I guess.
Yeah, like I've seen something where kind of in big letters it says something that I'm just making this up, but in your case it would be something like, want to work with a writer who understands X, Y, and Z.
Sure.
Learn more about how I could help you. And
okay. Right.
And then there's a learn more button or something like that, and you click on that, and then it takes you there.
Right. It has the what Squarespace does is they put the pages on top of the page that links up there. In fact, you gave me advice about that. You said go ahead and delete the links that you're not, that aren't being used right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but that way, if you see it there in the middle of the page, you can't miss it. Right now, they have to know to go up there and then click around. And the navigation, the navigation area there with the links,
yes.
Since it's not as prominent, some people are going to miss it.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, the other question I had, you mentioned, that I should use a proofreader.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you, when you do your copy, even now, do Do you always use a proofreader for your copy?
Not always, and many times, frankly, it's a timing issue. You know, I'm doing an email campaign or announcing a podcast or whatever, and it's you know, I'm basically working on it the day before or that morning, so there's no time. But on something like, well, first of all, that's no excuse, right? I need to change my process so that it still goes through a proofreader. But on something as permanent as a website, something as critical, yes, I always do, because going to live there, right?
Right. I can understand maybe on emails or something where you're in, if it's a really short time frame. I thought maybe you might do that habitually on white papers and case studies and so forth.
Oh, always on those.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and in fact, what I do there is, this is just a good practice for everyone, I recommend it highly, is before you submit the first draft to the client, run it through your proofreader first.
Okay.
And then submit it. And I say that because it might sound like common sense, but a lot of people think it makes more sense to do it later for the final draft. I think it's best to do it for your initial draft.
Oh, really?
Yes, because you want to make a great first impression. So do it on your initial draft. You know the client is still going to have some edits, but at least that first draft is so clean and polished that many times, first of all, it reduces the number of edits. The second thing for me was it avoided the embarrassment of just typos and errors that I just didn't catch. And your client starts losing confidence in you.
Okay.
You know, when they see that, they wonder, well, I wonder what else is in here. And the third reason is that you might find that, hey, once it's all said and done, the only edits were so minimal, you don't have to send it again to a proofreader. Now, if they were significant, if there were changes, and then I don't trust myself, and I go ahead and send it again. I send it through again to the proofreader.
Okay. And you, the company you use, you said was proofreadnow.com?
Yeah, and you know, that's just who I've used for years. I like it because it's online. They work 24/7. But you know, if you have someone that you know or someone has been referred to you, I mean, I think it's totally fine. For me, Proofread Now works a little better because sometimes I need faster turnaround.
Okay.
And I feel guilty telling an individual like a freelance proofreader, "Hey, Bill, I need this, you know, first thing tomorrow morning."
Right.
So I feel better if I know that they're telling me, that they're giving me options for turnaround, and I just pick that option and I pay accordingly. But their standard turnaround is 24 hours, which I think is fantastic, even on the weekends. So if you submit it at 4 o'clock on a Friday, it will be to you by 4 o'clock on Saturday.
Oh, great. Okay. And you said the pricing was, what, around $50 a pop, something like that?
No, they go by pages.
So
it's $11. By the way, they have two levels of service. One is just kind of basic, and the other one is much more intense. Most of the time, you just really need a basic service.
Okay.
That's $11 per page, but a page is considered 500 words.
Okay.
So on something like your website, you want to put it all in a one-word document. And right. And so they don't, you know, let's say that you have one page per on your Word document per page on your website. They're not going to charge you per page on your Word document. They strictly go by word count.
Okay.
So
if I put it all on one Word document, then that would be per 500 words.
Exactly. Right. So 5,000 words, and yours, you know, your website's not going to be that long, is, you know.
No, I doubt if it's 1,000 words.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would be like about $20 or so.
Their minimum charge is $23,
and
then it's $11 per page after that. And that's for the 24-hour turnaround, which most of the time that's all I use. Let them know. There's a place in there when you submit your document for notes. Let them know that this is a website, so there will be some repeated information, and you're okay with that. Because sometimes they will note the fact that you've said something three times, but that's because – they're reading it in a linear fashion, but on a website, people aren't going to read it that way.
Sure, exactly. Okay. All right, so you're saying it's You say their minimum charge is $23?
Yes. I'm pretty sure it's $23 the minimum.
Okay, so is that 23 plus 11 per page?
No, that's just the, in other words, if it's 500,
oh, okay.
Let's say it's 400 words, it's still going to be, it's not going to be 11, it's going to be 23.
I got you. Okay. All right, Ed. That pretty much answers all my questions.
If
I think of anything more, I'll raise my hand again, but that's good for now. Thanks a lot.
Oh, you bet. My pleasure.
And goodbye, from sitting here in sunny San Diego and enjoying your coaching call. So.
Awesome. Well, normally I'd be envious, but we're having pretty good spring weather. So.
Yeah, I imagine so. You're back in Georgia, right?
Yeah. It's just
it's getting nice in your part. It's getting nice in your part of the country too now, so that's good.
It is. Okay, super. Let's see. I have someone in Minnesota. Oh, this is I think this is Nicole. Hey, Nicole.
Hi, how are you, sir?
How are you?
I'm great. So I don't really have a question. I just wanted to say thank you. This has been such a great experience. I have taken a lot of online classes. This is by far the most useful and helpful that I've ever taken. And just knowing, how to price things, having the confidence to say this is my rate, and I've done it a few times now, said a number that I wouldn't have said before, and people are like, sure, no problem. And I would never have done that without having been through this training. So I just wanted to say thank you and let you know this has really made a big impact on my life.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much. It means a lot to hear that. It really does. But you got a great start here. You're doing fantastic. You know, the key, as I've mentioned several times, Nicole, right, keep building on that momentum. Like, don't let it die off. It's so important to continue that, and you can't. I do see people who, get some great wins at first, but then they don't keep up the momentum. And then to get started again, just like starting a bike back up a hill, right, it's hard work. So, keep riding the wave.
I will do that.
Great to hear, and I appreciate the feedback. I really do.
Sure.
And you know what? I'll say this to everybody. Keep in mind that, we've been working together for 4 months. I encourage everyone to take some time to go back through the material again. Now, I know when people tell me that, I've taken some courses where they say, go back through it. I'm like, oh, my gosh, that was a lot of material. I don't know if I really have the time. I try to make it easy for you to do that by giving you a better transcript than maybe other people would give you. So you'll note that the transcript for each session is almost like a mini ebook of sorts, right? If it were me, what I would do is you don't necessarily have to go through all the audios. Just if you haven't already printed all the transcripts, do so. If you're an online, I don't like to read too much on a screen, but it's up to you. If you're okay with that, then do that. And just review that. If you can review that, that's something easy to review. It won't take you, more than a few hours. And if you break it up over the course of a month and just do, a little bit every week, you can go through this material fairly quickly because it's a second pass through. So I encourage you to do that. It's amazing how much you'll pick up and retain if you go through it again. So it's there forever for you guys, but from experience, I know that the longer you wait to review, the lower the chances that you will do it. So make a commitment to yourself to go through it little by little, maybe one session a week. If you do that, it won't take you more than 20 minutes to do that per week. And I know it's going to make a difference. And in fact, I think I've recommended this before. I would take those, print them out, three hole punch them, and put them in a binder. And that way it's something you can review. And some of these sessions, as you guys know, become really good reference, like the sessions on qualifying and pricing. Those are huge. So keep those handy. I would even put tabs in there and call them not even by module but by topic, right? So here's the pricing module. So if you have to go back really quickly, we might even have a prospect on the phone, you have easy access to that information. And you know what? This is when the real learning starts. And those of you who are already working with clients know that, right? And the real learning starts when you apply this information to real-life situations. So more reason to go back through this. All right, so let me see if there's anything here on the webcast Q&A. Nothing there, and no raised hands. So let me just go to the forum real quick and see if there was anything. I haven't been to the forum today. Let's see. Yeah, you know what? Let me bring this up because Rachel had a question earlier this week about specialization and niche and all that. And let me just read it out loud and I'll address it. And it was more of a hypothetical question. She said, if I decide someday that I'm interested in primarily writing one type of document, white papers, for example, does it still make sense to focus on a specific niche industry, or is there a way to successfully work for anyone in any industry who needs that type of document? So the answer is yes. You could definitely specialize in one type of document or one type of project. People who come to mind are Gordon Graham, which many of you know. Gordon is, in fact, his website, thatwhitepaperguy.com, right? He's a white paper specialist. That's all he does. I shouldn't say that. He does case studies as well from time to time, but that's only if his clients ask him. He's not pursuing case study projects. And, in fact, he's no longer prospecting. All his clients come to him. All prospects come to him. He's been out there for a long, long time, so he can afford to do that. But so he's a white paper specialist. Casey Hibbard. All she does is case studies, and she's very successful at it. Now, in both of those cases, they focus on the project specialty, but they don't also have like a target market on top of that, right, as Rachel was asking about. Now, Casey, when I've talked to her, she says, yeah, I don't specialize in any industry, but most of my clients are in high tech. And I think that's been a function of the fact that she happened to have some clients in tech, and then word got around, and then she started knocking on more doors of similar companies. And so she's developed a good following there. So it's not that all case studies are in tech, not at all. It's just that's where she's developed the word of mouth and referrals. But my advice would be the project specialty is one that I would avoid from the start because it's too restrictive. You know, I only do case studies, or I only do blog posts, or I only do websites. It's too restrictive. At first, you really want to be flexible and open to many different possibilities, which is okay if you specify a target market. But when you specify a project type, or both, it's just too restrictive. So get some traction first, and then as you figure out your business, then you can decide if you want to go ahead and specialize in something narrower, so such as like one project type. I will tell you that before I kind of started phasing out some of my freelance writing work and doing more coaching and training, all I was doing, and in fact I was even telling people this, and it was in my website, my email signature, was everything was this: white papers, case studies, and bylined articles. Those were my project specialties. So I eventually narrowed it down, and the reason was that this is where I was getting the most traction. These are the projects that were the most fun and profitable for me, and that's where I had some depth of work and samples. So I was just trying, you know, we talked about momentum earlier. That's where I was trying to continue building that momentum. All right, so let's see. We got a couple of hands raised. One is in Los Angeles. This might be Hannah. Is that you?
It is.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent.
Good. So I just had a quick question about I put together that short lead magnet for the trade show I went to.
Yeah.
And so I want to put it on my site. Well, I did put it on my site, but right now it's sort of just like in the wash of like all the other tabs and everything. So do you have, I was wondering if you could recommend some kind of like a landing page plugin for WordPress or anything that you could recommend? Something
yeah,
to just have it more prominent. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a couple, but there's actually quite a few. But I'm not too plugged in, no pun intended, into the plugin scene. OptimizePress and OptimizePress 2, we use that
okay.
here. They make it super easy to create beautiful landing pages. I want to say it's a one-time fee, which is the other nice thing. Because there are others that are super easy, and you don't even have to host them. They host them for you. But it's a service. It's a monthly service, such as Lead Pages. Leadpages.net.
Okay.
So it's cool to check out, but I want to say that they're $60 a month. You could pay an annual, you know. But it's worth it if you're doing several of these, but when you're doing one, that kind of adds up. So I would look at OptimizePress 2. And I will write myself a note and ask Crystal. She knows a lot about that, and see if she recommends any others. Let me write myself a note.
Sure.
Let's see. Landing page plugins. Yeah, so I'll find out for you and post in the forum.
Awesome. Thank you, Ed. I appreciate that. And one other question, too. Just in terms of sort of labeling it, I've sort of been going back and forth between calling it an article and a report, you know, short article, free report. It's like, I don't know if one's better than the other or if they're, you know, if it matters. It's one of the ones that you read that was in the Facebook forum. I don't know if you remember it, but it's the Through Mistakes in B2B Natural Health Marketing.
Yeah, and there was like a numbered list, right, like five items.
Yeah.
Or five, okay. How, now that it's in finished format, how many pages?
2.5 maximum.
Okay. So this is just me, but you have to decide if this resonates with you. I think report, and the trouble with the word report is that it's been used a lot. So in my, this is my perception, it kind of lost its appeal in terms of perceived value. Article sounds very commoditized, right? And people don't think of opting in for an article. That's the other challenge with that one.
Right.
I would think a little more creatively and call it, you know, like a guide, checklist, roadmap, blueprint. Because I remember it's a numbered list. It does fit all of those. Think along those lines. That has, to me, when I read that, that sounds a lot more appealing than report, and it sounds more valuable than an article.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. I love that.
Yeah. And in fact, like if you really like, because I love checklists, if you really like that one, then what you could do is you could make it fit that. So right now it kind of does. But what if you, from a design perspective, it wouldn't take a designer much to do this. Each item, instead of being a number, you had like a big checkbox. You know, you could do stuff like that, right?
Yeah, okay.
And
that's great.
I
never would have thought of that. Thank you, Ed.
Yeah, you don't want a checklist that's 14 pages long, but if it's 2.5 pages, that kind of works.
Yeah,
so
I love that.
The,
and that's really approachable, too, I feel like. You know what I mean? People don't have necessarily time. Report sounds heavy. You know, article almost sounds involved, but checklist. Oh, I can look at
it
in a few seconds. Yeah.
It does.
Okay.
The trend has been to go to offer more easily consumable content. So you'll notice that in my sites, I went from, I'm even embarrassed to say it, I used to have, and this is like 6 years ago, this 80-minute class, audio class with a handout and everything. And it was great. It was so dense with content, very actionable. And my thinking was, well, the more I give them, the more valuable it will be. That was my lead magnet. And the feedback I got from some people who were honest with me said, man, it just, when I hear that, that sounds like work. And yeah, I know it's going to be valuable, but it's going to be the kind of thing that I don't even want to download now because it's going to give me one more thing on my to-do list. But if I hear checklist, then I'm more prone to download it because it's something I can take a quick look at now and get some value from.
Yeah, totally. Rather than, oh, I'll get back to this later and then just totally forgetting.
Exactly. Now, don't get me wrong. The right prospect will still download
yeah.
it, not to get knowledge, but just to kind of get a feel for like how your philosophy, how you think, how you write.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that's one of the benefits of a lead magnet that a lot of people don't realize. It's like, oh yeah, but I want to give them something that's going to like make a difference. Keep in mind that half the prospects are not doing it because they need more knowledge. They're doing it to check you out.
Right. That's kind of what I was thinking, yeah. Just sort of something, almost like another sample.
Yes.
But in a way where it's sort of like showcasing, like, this is what I can do for you and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then they'll even pay attention to the process, right? Your landing page, what did it look like? What would the thank you page that's got the actual download, what was that like? Was it seamless?
Right.
The email autoresponder they got back with a link to it just in case. They'll pay attention to those things.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they're marketers.
Right.
Just like cooks, you see chefs, they're like always... You know, you and I are just eating the food, and they're, like, examining everything about the dish, and they're looking
yeah.
at it differently.
yeah, that makes so much sense. Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. These are great ideas.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Good luck. And by the way,
and
one other thing, Anna, don't...
yeah.
I'm sorry?
I just said, and thank you for the course, too. It has been really amazing. But go ahead.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. No, you're welcome. One other mm-hmm. idea, that don't just use it there on your site. Use it as a follow-up tool. There's
okay.
many different purposes, right, many different uses. When you're following up with prospects, when you send a quote, if you think it's relevant, it just adds another oomph to it. Hey, here's my quote, and by the way, here's a checklist or a blueprint that I wrote, a roadmap. As long as it's related to the project you're quoting, things like that.
Okay. What about sending it? Does it make sense to link to it in a warm email?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, if it's gated, so if there's an opt-in required, maybe not.
Maybe that's a little weird. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, what you could do is include it as an attachment. So here's a link where you can learn more about me. And by the way, I've attached a checklist, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
Title, blah, 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 blah. I thought you might find it helpful or interesting.
Okay.
Or you know what you could do in a warm email instead of trying to, because that might be too much for the first email. So that could be what you include in your first follow-up email.
After the initial. Yeah, that's a good idea. Saving that for the next. I like that, actually.
It gives you kind of an easy follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. What's the other thing? Oh, I guess that's it. Thank you again so much. I feel like it's like I've learned a lot, and I've really come a long way. Like, I know exactly what I have to do now. It's just a matter of doing it and sticking to it, and I'm a lot more confident about it. So thank you.
Oh, excellent. My pleasure. My pleasure, Hannah. Cool. So let's see. I got somebody. It doesn't give me a name, but I think it says Missouri here with her hand raised, or a Missouri number, 636 area code.
Hi, Ed. It's Kim.
Hey, what's up, Kim?
So I have a couple of really quick questions and then one with a little bit more. So I've been reaching out trying to build my network with people on LinkedIn just to try and contact them that way as well.
Okay.
And I've received a few people who answered my request with, hey, I liked what you have to say in your profile. You look like a good match. Would you look over our sites? And we'd love to hear your thoughts. When you get those types of requests, do you tend to think that there are people who are wanting to do project, or are they just looking for free ideas from somebody?
You know, it's hard to tell. It could be either or. So my advice when you're starting out, like you guys now, right, it's you haven't had your first client or you've had a few, but you're trying to build your business, is to engage them. You know, don't see it as, oh, they're just trying to get free stuff from me. You don't know yet. So what I would suggest is put some parameters around it. And because at least they've raised their hand, you know, and that's huge. As you guys know, that's like the hardest thing to do. So get back to them and say, you know, yeah, would be happy to. Or once you've looked at it, then say, yeah, in fact, I took a look at it. Site looks great. I have some ideas and a couple of thoughts. And then use that opportunity to ask for the first conversation, right? I'd love to set up a 20-minute call with you just to go over that. You know, could we do something over the next couple of weeks? So now the ball's on their court. Notice what you just said is you said yes. You actually went through it, maybe jotted down some quick ideas, and you got time. You don't have to have everything down yet because you haven't gotten their commitment yet, right? So don't spend a lot of time. Just take a look at it, see if you can think of some things, get back to them. The other thing you did is you gave them parameters. You gave them a time frame, 20 minutes, and can we do that over the next couple of weeks? Now, a good prospect, at least a better than, you know, the pack, will accept that and talk with you. The bad ones are the ones who say, well, can you just email us some recommendations? Let's do that first. That's not a good sign.
Okay. And then I had a question about my general campaign. So I've been targeting companies that sell to hospitality in the tourism industry, so hotels, to restaurants, and those types of businesses. And I've definitely be aiming towards companies that do have larger numbers of employees, so minimum 10, usually try and get to 30 or 40. But a lot of them, I get to the first email and then the second one, and they either insist that they only do an hourly rate, or when I talk to them on the phone, they're asking for something small, like a blog post, and then they're getting sticker shock and saying, oh, that's like three times as much as what we were looking to pay, even though I'm definitely going in following that pricing sheet you gave us, 30 to 40% lower and that type of thing. So any ideas on like other places to target, or if I'm just targeting the wrong industry altogether? Or because a lot of them are like, oh, that's like, you know, way, way, way more than what we were expecting to pay.
And have they all been blog posts?
I've only had two or three companies say that, and then I've tried reaching out to some agencies that target hospitality, and I didn't really know, like, what a good hourly rate to quote would be, because I really am trying not to do hourly, but just to get some experience and to get a few things in the door, but, you know, they're wanting to pay, like, $15 an hour, which I thought was kind of low. So not only just blog posts, but in general, just, oh, wow, that's way more.
Yeah, so a couple of thoughts. First on the I don't think you're going after the wrong industry, first of all. I will tell you, though, that blog posts are tough. Blog posts are tough because that's kind of like the commodity of the business. That's the way it's perceived by many clients. So it's like, what's the equivalent? That's like the... you know, that's the loss leader. You know what I'm saying? Like that's you know what? That's your gallon of milk. If you go to the store, you notice your gallon of milk, it's like the same price everywhere.
Okay.
2% milk is the same price everywhere you go, because consumers pay attention to that. They know what a gallon of milk costs. So what you do is you get people in the door by pricing those price-sensitive items the same as everybody else, and then what you're hoping is once people are there, then they'll buy other things. You can't make money at a grocery store if all people are buying your milk and bread and eggs. So it's the same thing here. They're asking you for something that's like the loss leader. That's the one that's just been commoditized to the ground. And it's tough. So now I'm not saying you should lower it any further. Honestly, if they're saying, what did you quote, like $250 a post?
$125.
Wow. See, so they're saying that's like three times?
Yeah. That's what I thought. I was like, 150 is just at that 40% below average. And I had been looking at, I looked at some other resources from AWAI, and that seemed to be about the starting range. So I was a little surprised to get such negative feedback from that number.
Yeah, those are tough. So it may be, now many times you just don't have a choice. Like they're just asking you, well, what do you charge for a blog post?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what are you going to do? I mean, it's up to you. I think there's something to be said. There's nothing wrong with doing it for 50 or whatever it's going to be, and just getting your foot in the door, telling yourself, look, this is not going to be a long-term client. I'm just using it for the samples, for the experience. And you never know, it might lead to some other things, but I'm not even counting on that. I'm just doing it for this and for that. So there's that. The other thing is just keep knocking on doors and hoping that the next need that you're going to be asked about is going to be something different that's not one of those types of projects.
Okay, so then a follow-up on that. I'm doing mostly content, so blog posts, social media, you know, newsletters, that type of items, and then, of course, website content or web page writing. So are all of those the same type of approach where they're so commoditized people expect to pay very little for them?
No. Blog posts is kind of on its own. And by the way, I don't want to discourage you. That's not every company. Many B2B companies, they know the value of blog posts. The reason you're still not going to earn a huge amount is because it's a recurring type project. So, right, I'm not going to earn $700. Like, let me put it to you this way. A $500 word article, I'm going to charge $1,000 for, but I can't charge $1,000 for a blog post typically. And the reason is that if I'm going to do a blog post for somebody, now I could do a trial, but for the most part, they're hiring me to be their blogger. So it's going to be recurring. It's going to be predictable. Therefore, it's going to be less, right? But I'm okay with that. It's going to be maybe $500 is what I'll be able to get away with. So kind of a dollar a word is the way I kind of gauge it. But let's say it's four blog posts a month, one a week. $2,000 guaranteed a month, I'll take it. You know what I mean? So many B2B companies will pay that kind of money for a blog post. I think it's been an issue of there are many who don't, and there are many where it's been commoditized. And because blogging is one of those where a lot of writers kind of just flock to. Because, you know, the whole blogging world has been I think it's just been completely commoditized by people who are encouraging writers to become bloggers and to blog for money. And in a way, it's kind of a saturated service. But if you get in the door with something else and then they ask you about potentially doing some blogging for them, you usually can get more. So my that's a long answer to don't let it discourage you. Blogging kind of stands on its own. It's one of those that tends to be commoditized. That is commoditized with many companies.
Okay.
Yeah, and then what was it? So you had a second part of your question, and I forgot. I'm sorry.
Oh, I think I asked about. I found quite a few marketing agencies that target the hospitality, tourism, B2B industry.
Yes.
So they
okay.
Either do marketing for hotels, or they do marketing for companies that aim towards hotels to still be in that area. So they're boutique marketing agencies, right? They only do what I'm interested in doing. And they insist on doing hourly rates. And I was thinking it would just be a great position to have just to get some experience writing more, to have some more samples in that niche. And I would do hourly just for a few months, but what would be then like a reasonable rate to expect?
Yeah, so 15 is frankly insulting. That's an agency that just doesn't value good people, okay? Or something else is going on. Now, having said that, I'm going to go back to what I mentioned earlier. When you're starting out, you should be more flexible. You know, we talked about pro bono, right? Considering
right.
that as an option, as a path. That kind of, I mean, to me, $15 an hour kind of falls in that same category. Would I be willing to work with an agency for 15 bucks an hour for, let's say, a couple of months and walk away with some great samples, some great experience in terms of working with a client and all that? And the answer is, yeah, probably. You know, everyone's different. You just have to make that decision for yourself. But as long as you understand why you're doing it, then I think it's totally okay.
Oh, my question, though, was what is, like, the expected rate you can expect from a regular agency?
From a regular agency, I would say anywhere between 40 and – it kind of varies so much, but 40 to, say, to 90
okay.
an hour. 90 being kind of on the higher side, you're more established. What they value in you is your specific expertise or experience in this particular target market or in this topic.
Okay.
Then you're kind of in that range. 40 is more kind of generic, but that's still nowhere close to 15. That's why I thought, you know, 15 is kind of insulting.
Right. I quoted 50, which I thought I had done some research, and that seemed to be about the right, you know, a good starting position. And they're like, oh, we were hoping like 15 or 17 an hour. I was like, oh.
15 or 17, like $2 makes a dollar cost. Yeah.
Okay.
That's low. But you were absolutely right. 50 bucks, I think it's totally reasonable. And I would be willing to negotiate if they were kind of thinking, well, you know, we've been paying 35. I'd try to meet them somewhere in the middle. I think
right,
it's fine.
Right.
But, yeah. And there's some cases where it could go even higher than 90, but I'm just kind of giving you the very typical range. I have a coaching client right now. She's got a lot of work, but it's a lot of work every month for $45 an hour. With an agency.
Mm-hmm.
That's her biggest client. She's doing so much volume that, you know, she's okay with it, but she's trying to do better. So she's trying to bring in some new clients so she could phase that out.
Right, right. And that was my last follow-up question was, how do you let your clients know you're raising your rates? Because I hope to, once I start getting clients within like 6 to 8 months, hope to be able to start whittling down the list and, you know, raising my internal hourly. And how do you like send out an email saying, hey, by the way, starting this date, my fee goes up to this, or how do you do that?
Yes. Well, there's two answers to it. Let's talk first about your existing clients, and then I'm going to talk about the real way you do this, like the really the bigger question to ask. With existing clients, you just let them know, listen, effective this date, these are my new fees. You won't be able to get away with much more than, let's say, 10-15%.
Okay.
What you want to do, think about this. When you get the kind of news, if you're on their side, it's kind of a letdown. So in order to kind of make up for that, what you do is you grandfather them in. You give them like a grace period. Not grandfather, but a grace period. You know, over the next, let's say, what's today, the 24th, effective April 15th, these are my new rates or my new fees. However, because I truly appreciate your business, I'm going to hold our existing fees for the next 60 days. So, you know, till let's say June 1st or whatever. And then that way you're just showing them that you appreciate them and you value their business and their loyalty, and, you know, so you're doing it, you're doing them a favor. That tends to work fairly well. No matter what, there's some clients that they just they have a problem with it, and that's when they're going to want to part ways, and that's okay. The second thing I was going to mention has to do with what I just said in terms of clients leaving. It's perfectly natural and even desirable to lose clients every year, especially when you're starting out. It's, you know, just like with anything else in life, right? It's you move on, and that's just the way it goes, and it's healthy and it's good for you. The third thing is the real way to grow your income is not with your existing clients. Raising your fees by 10 to 15% is an incremental way, and that definitely helps. But the real way to raise your income is to raise your fees for new clients. So let's say you've been charging, let's go back to the blog post. Let's say you've been doing blog posts for 150. That's probably not a good example. Let's just say you've been doing, white papers for $1,000. Then what you want to do is your next prospect, you quote $2,000. And that's how you do it. They don't know what you've quoted other people in the past. So it's a lot easier to do it there. So your real breakthroughs are going to come from new clients.
Okay, thank you very much for all of your advice and help.
Oh, you're very welcome. Just keep plugging away, Kim. And, you know, it's rarely glamorous at first. You know, like these $15 an hour people who obviously don't value, you know, talented freelancers, you know, sometimes we got to work for people like that. I had some really crappy clients early on, and some were good people, just crappy in the way they were, crappy in the way they reviewed my work, crappy in other ways. It's okay. As long as it was temporary, then I could deal with it. I was using them just like they were using me, because I was using them as a learning experience, as a stepping stone, a way to get some samples, and so forth. So it's rarely pretty in the first year or so. Just be flexible and keep building on that. Just don't get stuck. The mistake a lot of people make is they kind of get stuck in there, and they forgot that that's not reality, that that's just a stepping stone, and they kind of stay on that stone, and then they never grow. All right. Yeah, great questions. Let me go to Q&A, webcast. Okay, so this one is anonymous. Somebody had a question. Want to say thanks for the class. It may not sound like good news, but I'm slowly phasing out low-paying clients and recently turned away two clients offering peanuts. I also have a question. So first of all, that's fantastic. Good for you. So let's see. I have a golden nugget I've been holding off on contacting. She is in a position to pitch my services to every major player in the sector I'm going back into, which is fashion retail. But right now, I don't have any clients. Is it better to have at least one in hand before I go to her? I was a journalist in her niche for years, but don't have copywriting clips in this niche. I would still go to her, and if she's a golden nugget, and if you guys remember when we talked about the List Kickstarter Matrix, a golden nugget, not only are they very well connected and plugged in, like in marketing, right, so the people you want to contact, but it's a high level of relationship, right? That someone you know well, they know you well. Because of that, I would be very transparent with them and just tell them how it is. I said, look, Susan, here's the deal. As you know, I'm very seasoned. I know my stuff, but I am right now. I have no clips in this industry, but I'm looking to get started. I'm looking for someone to give me a shot. Can you connect me with one or two people who you think, based on what you know about me and based on what they see here, would be willing to give me a shot? And let her, so by kind of explaining what kind of person you're looking for, what kind of prospect, letting her decide who might be a good prospect to refer you to. You're essentially telling her, look, I'm looking for someone who's willing to give me a shot based on what they see today and based on your recommendation of what you know I'm capable of and you know about in terms of my experience and knowledge and insight. And then let her decide that. Because then what she's going to do is she's going to, you said she knows like everyone, she's going to select one or two who are more open-minded and would be a better fit for you right now. And so that's the way I would approach it. I think that would work really well. So don't shy away from it now. Go for it. Go for it and let her guide you. Oh, that was Leanne in LA. No, it's all right, Leanne. It just didn't show for some reason. Usually the name shows up, but it didn't this time. Super. Okay, again, if you got a question, star 2 on your telephone keypad raises your hand, star 2, or you can just type it in if you're on the webcast. And while I'm waiting, I want to let you guys know that so in a couple of weeks, so it should be the first week of April, we're going to invite you guys. So we're going to close the forum. It's not going to be closed. It's just going to be closed for Q&A, but you'll still have access to it. So if you want to look something up, you'll have access to it. I will tell you, however, that if there's something in there you really want to have access to, let's say somebody's information, somebody's comment, my response to something you asked, I would copy and paste that or take some screenshots because you never know. Facebook can, you know, suddenly start deleting posts. I think some of the comments live on for 6 months. At least I heard that. So you may want to grab onto that and file it somewhere. But first week of April, we're going to invite everyone here to the B2B Launcher Alumni Forum. So you'll get an invitation from Crystal. You'll have to click on the link and request to be added, and then she'll accept you. And I encourage you to continue the conversation there. So everyone who's gone through B2B Business Launcher is there, and it's just a resource for you guys to just to have, you know, an access to not just you guys here from the group, but to other freelance professionals who've gone through this process. The other thing is I'm going to send you guys some information soon, I think in a couple of weeks too. I'm going to wait till the program is over, on my Get Better Clients Academy. And that's yet another way to continue getting the training to grow your business and to support you. Some of the things that we've talked about here I cover there, lead magnets, nurturing longer-term prospects. I'm adding a new class every month. The way I do this is each class is easily consumable. We just talked about this earlier, right? I want to give you training that you'll actually be encouraged to go through because it's not going to take you forever to go through. You can consume the entire training in 1 to 2 hours tops. Everything is broken down into very short lessons, so you don't have to commit to be there for 2 hours. And it's very, very detailed and actionable. So all the topics for each class every month, and I call them execution plans. Every month I give you a new execution plan, and it's very specific, and it's got handouts, video, audio, resources, etc. So if you decide to join me there, you'll get one of these every month. It's great for all levels, whether you're new, whether you're experienced, doesn't matter. Plus, there's a monthly call like we're doing now, monthly coaching call that you can join. So you still have access to me that way. This is all completely optional, guys, but I'll tell you more about it in a couple of weeks because I'm going to give you, as alumni, a special deal on that opportunity. All right. I'll give you guys another minute. I don't see any raised hands, but I want to make sure I don't cut this short. If there are still some questions. All right, Kino, you're on.
Okay, Ed, one more question for you.
Sure.
Well, a couple of real quick ones, actually. The once again, going back to the website, you probably observed, you know, again, I was hoping, I posted on Facebook in my last comment in the forum. I don't know if anybody else in the group had submitted their websites. I thought I'd like to be able to review a few other websites to see, you know, both offer my feedback and, more importantly, just maybe as a guide to how I might improve my own. You know, when you saw my site, you saw that the pages, you know, as they're set up by Squarespace, they're all pretty much just, you know, text, black and white text. There's nothing fancy on there, no graphics or any garnishment or anything like that. And I was wondering, so I guess it's basically a two-part question. First of all, can I get access to look at any of those other sites? And secondly, do you think that the site as I have it right now is sufficient to, you know, draw prospects without, you know, any fancy decorations or graphic enhancements and so forth?
So I'll answer the second question first, and the answer is absolutely yes. You don't need anything fancy. I think your site looks fine the way it is. And keep in mind that this is not the last iteration of your website. So you're going to continue to refine that over time. I think I had three or four iterations in my first three and a half years. So it was like almost one a year. It's completely natural. I encourage everyone to do that because right now you know enough to kind of get started. But you're going to learn a lot in the first few months when you start working with clients, and you're going to want to refine and tweak your website. So I think it's absolutely fine. I commend you for putting it out there. I see too many people who wait until their site is perfect before going live, and the problem with that is it's never going to be perfect. So just get it live. You know, when it's good enough to go live, and then tweak it as you go. To your first question, there is actually a website peer review thread that's got a ton of links to websites from other students in the group. The way to find it, Kino, the easiest way is if you go to the forum and kind of there on the top right area, there's a search field. Type in website. I'm going to try it now. Website peer review. And it will come up there, and it will be the first thread that comes up.
Okay.
So give that a try, and then you'll see it, all kinds of links to other websites, plus you'll see my comments. So if you wanted to see kind of like a before and after, that
sure.
could be a good exercise too. You know, if anyone wants to give Kino feedback, so he posted his in the last Q&A thread that's posted there now.
Oh, okay. You're saying I probably should have posted it in that forum, in that peer review thread.
Yeah, but it's okay. I mean, it's totally okay. I'm just telling everyone where it is in case they're looking for it. So if anyone wants to give Kino feedback, it's just there in the questions for this past couple of weeks. But if you, Kino, if you want to go looking for others, that website peer review thread is where to go.
Oh, great. All right, Ed. Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome.
Once again, I think I'll just have to echo what others have said, you know, on this call and so forth. This has been a really, you know, practical, down-to-earth, you know, nuts and bolts program. I'm just... you know, looking to pretty much do what you said, you know, start out generally. You know, I worked on so many different projects, all of which are not really, you know, very similar to each other. So I'm just going to go ahead and just start, you know, right now I don't have a special passion or area that I'm really, you know, motivated on. It's just, I've just done so many different things in the high-tech industry. So I'm just going to go ahead and start out as a generalist and, as you said, just narrow my focus depending on the circumstances as things progress.
I think
that sounds pretty realistic?
Yes, and that's exactly how I would do it. You don't have to have all the answers, right? What do they say? You don't have to see the whole staircase to take the first step. So go for it. The answers will come as you move. As you keep moving forward, as you keep walking, the answers will come. You're absolutely doing it the right way.
All right,
so, and thank you.
That.
Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that.
All right, Ed. Well, I guess we won't have a chance to talk again in this program, but hopefully I look forward to maybe talking with you in the next one that comes up, the Academy.
Likewise, Kino. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ed.
Okay. Let's see. I think this is Kim. Kim, you there?
Hi, Ed. I just had one quick other question. I had been looking through that list you gave us a couple weeks ago of, like, the 39 ways to maximize different types of clients and prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a question about the Ideal Wellspring. I have been promoting my business through social media recently, through Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, by doing a lot of content curation, because it's also one of the packages I offer to companies. And I found that quite a lot of things that talk about a pain point or a problem most companies face or tips on how to improve something with their marketing, it's written by a competitor. So with the Ideal Wellspring, I noticed it was, you know, give them an idea of what they might could use. Any recommendations on where to look to find non-competitor produced content? Because I'm assuming you don't want to use that to say, hey, look at this report I created. More like saying, hey, this is something that a lot of companies in your niche should look into doing, and oh, by the way, I offer this. But if I share a third-party content that's from a competitor, I don't think they'll think of me first.
Yeah, it is tough. So a couple of ideas. One of them is use it as inspiration to start creating your own short articles that you could then use from a content curation standpoint, right? So when you're sharing valuable content, I think you've probably seen, now that you've been doing this for a couple of months, these are not – you could do a lot of this, right? We always – I don't know about you guys, but I always felt, oh, well, I don't know enough to – but the more I looked at what people were putting out there, the more I realized, you know what? I may not have all the answers, but I bet I could research a lot of it. And two things came about. One was, yeah, I had to spend time doing this. But number one, I learned a lot. And number two, I ended up with a great little asset that I could use to follow up with prospects, to, you know, to share in social media and so forth. You can become a mini expert just by giving yourself that kind of assignment. And I found that out by accident. What was happening is when I started getting client projects and I had to do research, I became kind of a mini expert on that topic. So if I was writing a white paper about mixing and blending in yogurt manufacturing plants, you know, I suddenly knew a ton about how yogurt is made. And, you know, of course, talk about a way to, like, lose friends at a cocktail party. It's like, oh, did you know how they make this? Number one, consider creating, like, some of that content on your own. And these days, it's never been easier. You could do a lot of the research. Number two is when using third party, try to stick with third party if you're going to share it with third party that's non-competing. For instance, HubSpot has some fantastic content on business-to-business marketing. And that's just one example. But if I send someone a HubSpot article or lead magnet, you know, that I downloaded from them, or just a kind of an infographic or something, it's not my content, but I'm not competing against HubSpot. They just happen to create great content.
Okay, and then as a follow-up, I've actually created, I have been posting a series of articles on LinkedIn with Pulse on how B2B hospitality companies could create content for their blogs, and I compiled all of those into an ebook. So I have this 16-page ebook that I want to use in a lead generation campaign, but I think I mentioned this earlier, but you say to use it as a follow-up as opposed to the first contact with a potential client?
Yeah, so when Hannah and I were having that conversation earlier, the idea there was that she's using it as a lead generation tool, as a lead magnet. But I said, hey, you know, there's multiple uses for this. Let's say that you email Bill Smith at ABC Company, and he doesn't, after 2 weeks, you haven't gotten a response back. If you know, remember the process for warm email, right? The second follow-up attempt, you're sending the original email with kind of a new comment on top. And you're not saying, hey, how come you haven't, you know, did you get this? You're not saying that. You're saying, hey, Bill, something to this effect. Hey, Bill, I forgot to mention when I emailed you a couple of weeks ago, blah, 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 blah. So it's kind of a very organic type of follow-up. So that's an opportunity to then include that ebook. Hey, Bill, when I emailed you a couple of weeks ago, I hadn't finished this, or I forgot to attach this ebook I just created called yada, yada, yada. I thought you'd find it helpful. Anyway, let me know if you're interested in connecting sometime soon.
Okay.
Right? So that's another great use for it.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I echo everyone's comments. This program has definitely let me narrow down into how to actually get clients. And even though I don't have one yet, I feel it'll be soon.
Oh, man, you're like on the verge. I feel it. You're doing the right things, Kim, which is, this is great. And this is what I love. Like, you guys are not, most of you guys are not sitting idle. I mean, you're trying things. You're taking consistent action. That's key. Here's what I can't tell you. I can't tell you where it's going to come from or when. But I do know this. If you have the right strategy and you're taking consistent action, you can't help but get some success. I mean, that's just like in anything in life, right? I've given you the right strategies. Now it's just a matter of keep doing it. For some people, as you've seen, right, it's happened fairly quickly. Others kind of, you know, not as quick. And some others, you know, you still haven't landed your first client. But that's okay. Don't compare yourself to others. Use it as inspiration. But just know it took me 6 months to land my first client. I mean, talk about discouraging. I had put all kinds of time, money, energy. I invested in courses, a coach, two coaches by then. And 6 months, man, and I had what I thought was amazing experience. It just, you know, it took me longer. I didn't give up because I had no choice. I was stuck in a job, and I'm like, man, if I don't get out of this now, I mean, I'll never get out of this thing, and I'll just keep getting sucked into this cycle. It's like the mafia. So, yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, Kim. I'm glad what you just said. Like, you're posting in Pulse. I've been talking to some people recently, other freelancers, who are getting really good success by posting in LinkedIn Pulse, which is kind of their editorial blogging platform. Don't be afraid to try that, and don't be afraid to post the same article in your newsletter or blog if you guys do end up building one. Don't be afraid to post the same ones in Pulse. In fact, that's a very common strategy. There's nothing wrong with it. You're not going to get penalized by Google for having the same content. Don't worry about that. But repurpose your content that way. You can get a lot more eyeballs in LinkedIn Pulse than you would on your site. So definitely something to try. Just like with anything, don't put all your eggs in that basket and don't get emotionally attached to it. Some people try and they say, oh, okay, this is where my clients are going to come from. And they put all this time and attention into LinkedIn Pulse or their blog or whatever, and they think that that's where it's going to happen. You don't know where it's going to happen. So just, you know, plant all these seeds everywhere, and you'll who knows which ones are going to sprout. So good stuff. Okay, I got Leanne in L.A.
Oh.
You're on. Hello? Wait a minute. Did I just – I'm sorry, Leanne. I think I may have accidentally muted you again. Just bear with me. Hold on. Okay, how about now? Are you there?
I don't know. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh. I was wondering, I feel like I'm kind of at the phase where I'm dropping clients so that I have a little more space and time to get the slightly higher paying clients. And I was wondering if you had suggestions for best practices, because I've gotten some people who I certainly tried not to burn a bridge. I said, I'm going to finish this, what we're doing, and then we're, you know, and then I'm moving on to something else. And Some people haven't taken it very well, so I'm wondering if you have any suggestions as to how to make that a little more graceful.
Yeah, it's. I think it's in the nuances, first of all, and because it's nuances, every situation is completely different. But in terms of generally speaking, the way I would think about it, make it more about you and less about them, which is kind of the opposite of many other things. So in other words, they shouldn't feel like they did something wrong or that you don't like them anymore. Make it about there have been some changes in my business, I'm shifting gears, shifting direction, whatever. It's about you and not them.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like the breakup. Oh, it's not you, it's me. because then feelings don't get hurt. I think you can have a better, easier conversation that way. And, you know, sometimes you can't help it. Some people are still going to take it the wrong way. I think that diffuses the probability. Secondly, I think you'd be surprised at how many people will be fine with it. I remember losing sleep over some of these, and then things just kind of fell apart on their own. Not in a negative way, just things kind of evolved anyway. Where they were kind of glad and, you know, said, well, you know what, that's, you know, maybe for the best because we're, you know, changing this or that or the other. So sometimes there's kind of a natural place. Where I think you have the ones that are difficult are the ones that either your arrangement is kind of like a consistent monthly scope of work, or they're ramping up. Those are a little harder, and so that's when you really got to emphasize the whole you're shifting gears thing.
Okay, that actually helps a lot, and I've gotten a lot out of the class too. So thanks for that.
Oh. Excellent. Well, thank you. It was great to have you here, my two LA people, you and Hannah. I've been there in a couple years. I need to make a trip out there. I love that city. All right. I think this is Chris. Chris, is that you?
Hi, Ed.
Hello.
That's me. Hi. First of all, shout out to Kim. She ask a few things that touched on what I was going to ask about. And I've been reading Kim's LinkedIn posts, and they are really good. She's doing a great job with that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So I have a couple questions.
Okay.
First one's simple. The copy editing service that you were talking about earlier, do you have that listed somewhere in the forum or in one of our handouts?
The copy editing.
The proofreading. I'm sorry, the proofreading.
Oh, the proofreading. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's proofreadnow.com.
Proofreadnow.com. Okay.
It's in the forum, but you know where it is, where I mentioned it? Was in the website peer review thread.
Okay.
Because pretty much across the board, I was just telling everyone, hey, you know, here are my suggestions, and by the way, I would go ahead and get it proofread. And I hope everyone understood, hey, not because there's a lot of mistakes here. I did catch some typos, but it was mainly because this is important enough that I would go ahead and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay,
I tell you,
good.
Those guys, you know, the way this came about for me was I never thought about proofreading until I launched my newsletter. And I had a friend of mine who was subscribed to it, and she's a freelancer too. And she told me, and it was like 2 months in a row, Ed, I hate to tell you this, but you have this typo here in your newsletter. And I was horrified.
I've done that too with things that, you know, you just get so attached to it, and you're so close to it that you don't catch things.
I know, but you know what? As you guys know, right, it's like when that's what you do, for a living, right? If you cook, your food better be great. If you're if you're a fitness trainer, you better be fit, right?
Yeah.
So
even chefs have people taste their food.
Yeah. So it's that's what she said. By the way, let me just give you a suggestion. And I was a little hurt, you know, but my pride was a little hurt. But I tell you, that's been, gosh, I don't know, like 8 years, 8, 9 years, and I don't know. To me, like I said, I'd rather support a freelancer, but this mm-hmm. is a function that I kind of need on demand. And I don't want to put a freelancer through – I don't want to make him jump through hoops. So I prefer to go through a service. By the way, I'm sounding like a commercial for them. This is not. They have two proofreaders go through your document. I didn't mention that earlier, which I think is fantastic. So if one misses something, then the other one will catch it.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Well, that's good to know. I want to make sure I had that information. Okay, thanks. And then I have a potential client that I've been talking with, and they're a big company, and they have a lot of different divisions that I could write for. And mm-hmm. they suddenly had, like right after I talked to the guy, he emailed that, our molecular group has a project they're interested in, and they want to know if you have an example of, however they said it. Do you have something? It ended up being like a one-page summary advertisement like you see in magazines. Mm-hmm. Looks like an article, but it's really an advertisement.
Oh, yeah, like an advertorial.
Yeah, and I didn't have anything exactly like that. And I sent him a couple of other things that were very similar for him to share with the molecular group leaders, and they ended up saying, well, I'm not sure that she's the right fit for this. Now I know very well I could write it. I mean, I asked him to send me an example of what they had been looking for, and he did. And I can write that. And so I'm thinking, I'm going to pick another topic, and I'm going to write a piece like that about it,
okay.
a related topic. And I know Kim kind of talked about this. Obviously, I could use that, as a sample. But I would like to present it to my marketing guy contact and say, this just got me going on wanting to write one or two of this kind of advertorials, and I thought I'd share with you what I did. So what do you think?
I like it. So a couple of ideas. One is when somebody – so you did the right thing. Okay, do you have a sample of A, and I don't have it, but I look at it and say, well, I know I can read – I can write this. I have a sample of B, and then what I do is I show them how A and B are similar. Or at least the elements of it that are similar. If I can write B, Mr. Prospect, here I can write A, and here's why. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And for many prospects, that's good enough. That makes sense. When they come back to you and say, "Well, I'm not sure if they're the right fit, if she's the right fit," then what I throw it back at them. I say, "Hey, completely respect that. I always agree with people. Completely respect
mm-hmm.
that." What are you looking for? Like, what's important for you here with this piece? And I put them on the spot. And then they can come back to me, and then I can address those two or three points one by one. Not in a defensive way, but in completely understand Bill or Jane or whatever. So here's some thoughts on A. Here's some thoughts on B, and here's some thoughts on C. And then just to make it even better, I go ahead and say, do like a risk reversal. What if we try one? In fact, let's do this. Normally, I charge $900 for this. What if we do this for $450? We try one. Let's just see how you feel about it. And if it works out great, we can look at some other ones at the regular rate. And if not, then at least all we've done is just one. In
mm-hmm.
fact, I mean, I don't know how you feel. I would be willing, you're a little further along, but if I were starting out and I was really hungry, I'd say, and I'll tell you what, if you don't like it, if you were disappointed, you don't have to pay anything. I mean, that's another idea, but you don't necessarily have
to
go there.
Okay.
And I think, so here, why would I prefer that way? Because if I'm going to take writing a sample one is going to take several hours, right? So
mm-hmm.
doing this, I think we keep the momentum going and the conversation going. And I think the chances are higher there in landing it than, okay, I've been turned down. Let me prove it to them that I can do it. And by then, maybe they've moved on. You never know.
Right. Well, one thing that I'm running into with this particular company is they're international. I'm working with the U.S. group that's actually in the Indianapolis area, happens to be. And so I've been talking with the marketing manager for the Indianapolis offices. And so he has all these different focus groups within the company, like the virology group or the molecular group, you know, that kind of thing, come to him and say, we want to do this. We're going to do this series of three advertorials on this topic. And so he's my contact, but he's not the only person making the decision about who to use and how to get this content written.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I have kind of a buffer there between me and all of the decision makers.
Okay.
And some of the other companies that I'm getting responses from are probably going to have the same situation as well. They're big enough companies that they have, it's not just one person making the decision. And a lot of it is because it's very technical stuff. It's very scientific stuff. And so, you know, a non-science marketing person needs the input of the science specialist in a topic A.
Okay.
So I see what you're saying, and I think I will definitely do that, even with my marketing person. You know, if this happens again. But what do you think about me doing it now? Because I'd like to do it just to, again, have a sample or maybe two of.
Yeah, that changes things because you have there is an influencer, right? So you have like a marketing person, but the kind of the technical influencer is, let's face it, right? Those people want to see and feel. They think differently. So in that case, that kind of makes your sample then a little bit more important.
Okay.
So that changes my answer a little bit. That's a unique situation. You have a distributed team. It's not just one person making that decision. Then I think there is value in doing that. And like you said, if you don't mind, and you know what, it sounds like you could get mileage out of it anyway, even if it's a no here, then I would go for it. I think that's an investment worth making.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what I was thinking, too, because I feel like this guy that I've been talking with, we've had a lot of exchanges, and I feel like he's a real advocate. He's looked at my website. He was real excited about it. And the company, I mean, there's a lot of potential projects with this company, I feel, and so I don't want to give up. I want to keep pushing.
Yeah.
So,
I don't blame
okay,
you.
That's. So I guess when I get it done, I'm thinking of just emailing Jay and saying, hey, you know, I read the sample advertorial that the molecular group was interested in getting something similar written. And, you know, here's this hot topic. I'm thinking like Zika virus or something. And I decided to go ahead and write a similar one. On this topic, and I thought I'd just share that with you so when, you know, other opportunities come up, you would already have, you know, have something in hand that would maybe fit the bill for some of your other groups or that same group.
I think that's a great way to do it.
Okay.
And then let the piece stand on its own, especially with the more technical people, the scientists.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I needed to know. I didn't know about this the right way. But you're right. What you were talking about earlier about if they say, well, maybe not, maybe this isn't right, then putting it back on them and asking them, well, what exactly are you looking for? And I could have done a better job of pointing out how the samples I did send them could translate.
Yeah, and you know what? But don't beat yourself up. I mean, it just... That's kind of a habit to build, and that takes time to instead of think, I never, when I hear no or some variation of that, I rarely take the no. I usually want to figure out, okay, well, how can I turn this around? You know, it's because it's not always yes and no. There's usually a third alternative or a different path, right? So it's kind of thinking that takes some getting used to, though. I still struggle with that in many different ways, but I tend to think more creatively about it when I really feel like I want that opportunity or I need that client, or then I start thinking a little bit outside the box.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, I want to thank you too, Ed, for everything that you've helped us with in this program, because I actually have hope now that I can actually get this going. And really make this work, make it a success. So I appreciate it very, very much.
My pleasure, Chris. Great to work with you, and I'm glad to hear that. And, yeah, just keep riding that wave. That's fantastic.
Okay. Thanks, Ed.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. I have a raised hand, and it's an Erie, Pennsylvania number, 814 area code.
Yeah, hey, Ed, this is Steve. How are you doing?
Hey, good, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Wondering if you have any special advice about working with international clients. I got up on Monday and opened the email, get started, and somebody had written back from Copenhagen, and I don't think I was even really aware that I had approached a company in Copenhagen. But they obviously do business in the United States as well. And, but I it just this conversation is being set up for the first week in April, which, by the way, is just an aside. I'm at least the companies I'm going after seems like I'm getting that kind of thing. I've got three others who want to have early April conversations, and I can't really attribute that to anything. One person said it might be that it was a budget thing, and I'm thinking maybe it's like year end is closed out and they actually know how much they had to spend come second quarter moving forward or something. You know, they're reassessing, but you know, that's just an aside. I don't know if you have experience with that as well. But
it
my
could
real
be
question,
anything. It could be anything. And you know what? Many times, think about this: is spring break season.
Yeah,
a lot of people
that's
are
true.
Either out next week
true.
Or the week after. And
yeah,
that's so that's why they're scheduling. I mean, I know I've had several people who are scheduling 2 weeks ahead right now because of that.
Yeah, yeah, okay. But, yeah, I mean, with the international thing, it's like I don't expect the conversation to be that any different, but, you know, in terms of products and what they're after. But I don't know if they think differently about pricing or if, you know, are there any other considerations. You know, you had brought up the consideration of the CanSpan thing relative to Canada, and are there any issues like that when you're working in that with someone who's not from the United States?
Well, it depends on the project. I mean, a lot of those things like CanSpan, that's a regulatory thing. I don't think that's going to impact things like that. Aren't really going to impact your project. But I'm not sure I'm making the connection, though. So I just want to make sure I understand your question, though. Like in terms of things that you may not be thinking about right now that are going to pertain to a client overseas?
Yeah, yeah, and particularly a European client. If there's anything you've worked with a European client, anything sort of stood out to you as this should be a sort of a general thing you should be aware of when you're working across that kind of boundary.
No, I think it's mostly a cultural and language thing. Many times it's hard to form a connection because of the language barrier and to read people that way. Some of the Nordic countries, what you might experience, listen, what I'm about to give you, it's like, this is just general. So one of my biggest clients was actually from Copenhagen. Now they have their U.S. headquarters, here in Atlanta. But, you know, much of their management, all their management really was from over there. my experience was that, you know, it's a little bit drier in terms of, like, personality. And I don't mean that in a negative way, just
right.
And, you know, it's more socialist country. So the attitudes mm-hmm. about money and are different.
Okay.
There's more of a sense of equality. The reason I'm mentioning that is that pricing may be an issue. They might be more
okay.
price sensitive because in their minds, like, everyone should be equal. You shouldn't make, like, you know, that kind of money. Are you kidding? Like, I don't make that kind of money. And again, I have to just emphasize, again, I'm overgeneralizing here. But
sure.
That's kind of, in my mind, as you're telling me this, that's what would be going through my head.
Okay.
I would proceed with caution just because of those things from my past experience, knowing that, look, I could be way off. Like, these people could be, you know, very different.
Yeah, right. Okay, great. Thank you very much. And thank you for the content as well. This has just been a great experience. And I can tell that there are other folks, too. I can sort of tell from their comments we're all at that point where you just got to keep your foot on the accelerator because we got things in the hopper and we've maybe done a project, but, you know, we're now just billing for that project and we're trying to make the other things work out. And it really is, I think you're so, you know, spot on, and you've said it several times about the momentum thing. It's just, you can't, you know, no matter what's going on in your life, you gotta just keep your foot on that accelerator. So I appreciate all that encouragement and all the content.
Oh, man, my pleasure. Yeah, great to work with you, and you're right on. Don't let what's happening today impact your actions. If what's happening today doesn't look rosy, if it's looking great, then yeah, let it impact your actions. That's very hard to do, but I've learned that you have to at least try. You have to at least try to you know what? Because you never know what may be happening behind the scenes. Somebody may be mm-hmm. on the verge of contacting you. Something big may be about to happen. And just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not happening, right? Just keep your eye on the prize. Keep going. It's not always going to be the 4th of July. So keep at it. By the way, one last thought about this prospect. Depending on – you were the one who approached them with a warm email? Is that the way it worked?
I did, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So depending on the nature of what you said and what type of company they are and how they match your background and experience, if you think they might be kind of engineering type, so like my contacts at this client I told you about, so they were engineers. I mean, they were left brain people. They were not marketing people that by training. They didn't have that. So try to really focus on left brain, tangible, emphasize your experience, you know, mm-hmm. talk in real, you know, no BS, right?
Yeah.
Keep it real.
Yeah.
Emphasize those things, no fluff. They're going to appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. One last thing I'll tell you, it's a great story. When I the guy who brought me into this company was an American guy, right? And he'd been there for mm-hmm. a few years, very trusted. So we did this deal, and it was like $20,000 because we bundled in all this work, right? It was a lot of money. Uh-huh. And they had the 50% deposit ready for me, $10,000 check. It also happened to be a time when I really needed this, and it was right before Christmas, okay? So you can imagine. They said it was going to be at the front with the receptionist. So I show up. Yeah. I hadn't even shaved that day. You know, I just show up to pick up a check. And then she says, oh, yeah, you're at Andreas wants to talk to you. And Andreas is the president, straight from Copenhagen, you know. So I got nervous. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm not presentable. And I barely met this guy. He's not my main contact. He's not my champion. So I'm sitting there. He's making me wait for like 15 minutes. Finally, he comes out with my contract, and he says, come with me. And he goes into the conference room and starts going through it line item by line item. What is this? And I don't like this.
Oh,
I was so nervous.
Oh, man. Oh,
but we
God.
Pulled through. I don't know how it happened, but I made him feel comfortable. I said, listen. And I was I was upset too, because I'm, you know, I thought we had this thing done and questioning everything, and but it happened. It happened. And the one thing I will tell you is, so a lot of people like that, once they trust you, they're very loyal. So just to let you know, if it just does go through, you know, they might be a little tough at first, but once you're in, like, they, you know, it's that loyalty.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That is a good story.
So don't sweat it.
Right. Very good.
All right. Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. War stories. Rich sent something through the webcast. Thanks for a quality program. You're a skilled instructor, teacher, mentor. I appreciate your style. Man, thanks, Rich. Appreciate that. Great having you here. Make sure I didn't miss anybody. So last call, guys. Any questions? Again, star 2 if you are on the phone and want to raise your hand. All right, I don't see any other raised hands. We'll go ahead and close it out, wrap it up. So again, guys, it's been a pleasure working with everyone here. It's been a fantastic group. I think the theme is very obvious, right? Keep doing what you're doing, even if you're not seeing success right away. Keep doing what you're doing. There's a reason why you're doing this. Keep that front and center. I know I had my reasons. That's what drove me when, you know, it seemed like I was just spinning my wheels. Momentum is the key. I've said that several times. I cannot say it enough. Everyone here has built some degree of momentum. Don't waste it. You know, ride that wave. Keep riding that wave. Keep building the momentum. That is what's going to keep you going. Work on building the habit of prospecting. It doesn't matter if it's 15 minutes a day, 30 minutes a day, whatever. And it doesn't have to be daily, but it has to be consistent. So the habit, developing the habit, is much more important than anything else. Just work on, if you say it's going to be 30 minutes Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, then make that commitment to yourself and come through. Make it happen regardless. And before you know it, it's going to be a habit, and then you're not going to have to think about it. It's not going to be painful, and it's just going to get done. If you focus on building the habit and you focus on the effort, the results come, okay? That is so key. I learned that the hard way. Don't obsess over the results. Just focus on the habits and the action that, if consistently deployed, will generate the results, and then the results come. So with that, guys, again, thank you. Thank you for joining me in this journey. We'll continue that conversation in the alumni forum. Again, I'm not there all the time. I'm there sporadically, but the real value there is that you have a community that you can continue to tap. And I wish you all the best, and have a great rest of the week. Talk to you guys soon.